When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? Well, that's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies. And even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
The track that's playing under us right now is Sting's Fragile. There's a reason for that because our guest today, Annabeth Gish, wonderful Annabeth Gish, came on our show and talked to us for an hour about her career. She has a very fond connection to a particular song associated with every movie that she made in the 80s. And this is one connected with one of the movies that we'll get to in the interview.
Yeah, one would imagine that if we had talked about movies that she did in the 90s and the 2000s, 2010s, that she would probably have a song associated with every movie. But it's particularly awesomely nostalgic that we were like, oh, we want to talk about these movies. And she's like, oh, yeah, I've got this song there. This song brings me right back to that moment. This song brings me back to that moment. And that's really cool because not everyone has that. And certainly the first guest to be that specific when it came to scenes and songs that took her right back to those moments.
She's kind of the perfect guest for our show. That's the whole premise of our show, is the movie and then a song from that movie that stood out to us.
100%. It's like we couldn't have scripted it better. I was so excited when we did an interview her. I'm excited now to launch this interview. Annabeth, you've seen her everywhere. She's working constantly. You know, she's been in, I feel like I need to probably reference her resume. Now, for us, you know, the movies in the 80s, that's what we're most fond of. So movies like Hiding Out, Mystic Pizza, Shag, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, these are the movies that register to us and sort of brand, along with $2 Late Fee and the movies that we talk about. Annabeth's filmography is so extensive that I didn't want to, I just don't want to miss anything. But, like, you know, she's currently, she's been in The Haunting of Hill House, a hugely popular series on Netflix, super scary, super awesome. She was in The X-Files, Halt and Catch Fire. You know, she's guested on, like, every show that's been on TV in the last 10 years. Pretty Little Liars, Sons of Anarchy, Parenthood. I mean, the list goes on and on. She did some stints in Parks and Rec. I mean, she is a beast in the best way. She's always working, and so for us to get her was so awesome.
Yeah, she was working right before she did the interview with us. She went back to work right after the interview with us. For her to take the time and sit down with us and talk about her career, talk about everything, talk about, yeah, to do a deep dive with us was such a great treat, you know, and for her to do that was really mind-blowing to me personally. I know to both of us it was fantastic to have her on the show, and it was really fun to kind of dig a little bit deeper and to get to know her a little bit more than outside of some of the roles that we love her in.
I totally agree, but all right, should we get to it? I'm excited. Let's get to it.
Without further ado, we present you our interview with the one, the only, Annabeth Gish. No boners.
It's not a bone, it's a muscle. Annabeth, thank you for joining us today. This is so special, I can't even tell you. Zach and I should probably just get our adoration of you out of the way so then we could just move on to business. But, you know, we are an 80s movie podcast, and you have been in some of the most definitive films of that time period for us. And obviously people know you, you know, you're like in everything every day anyway. We see you on the TV all the time. You're in, you know, West Wing, Halt and Catch Fire, The X-Files, all these things. But like, you know, for us, it's like Hiding Out, Mystic Pizza, Shag. And so we just really appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show. It means a lot.
Oh, I'm honored to be here. In fact, I think, didn't I find out about you and you guys and your podcast via... You had posted that video from Hiding Out, right? On, which was like classic roller skating footage, and it was, and then I found it and reposted it and loved it. So then I found you guys. I'm so happy.
We are so happy too. I mean that that scene from Hiding Out in which you're roller skating with John Cryer. It's like mm-hmm. your first official date, I think, in the movie. and he's a terrible roller skater, and you are not.
Yeah, and I took a pretty nasty fall, by the way, as I was watching that. I'm like, that looked like it hurt. I don't think that was a stunt, it certainly wasn't intentional.
Well, every Saturday we post on our Instagram, Soundtrack Saturdays, and Dustin makes this fantastic video, and the collection of cassettes that we use are my own personal collection.
Oh, nice.
And so I have an extensive, part of our show is a soundtrack component. We always talk about the soundtrack to a movie, one specific song. And so I guess we had an upcoming interview with Keith Coogan and we thought, okay, let's promote it with Hiding Out. And Dustin's like, you have the soundtrack to Hiding Out? I said, oh my God.
Well, you know, what's fascinating, I'm sure you've done your research, and this, I love this aspect of going into movies through music, because for me, music is always the first way in. If I need extra help as an actress to orient myself in a scene. So sometimes I'll play a song or whatnot. And we can even go through Mystic Pizza and Shag and Hiding Out, and I'll give you my songs that come immediately to mind.
Oh, wow.
But because of Hiding Out, you know, Hiding Out was directed by Bob Giraldi, who at the time was a massively successful music video director. Remember MTV those days?
Yeah,
vaguely.
It actually was music videos.
So, you know, he had that sort of music, obviously was going to be a big part of that movie. And the two songs that I associate with Hiding Out are Catch Me, I'm Falling, which is, I think that's the one you played, right?
Yes.
And then the other one is the Katie Lang, Roy Orbison song, Crying.
Yep.
For which they made a remarkable, epic, beautiful video. Then I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight when you stopped to say hello. You wished me.
That song pulls on my heartstrings in that movie so much because it's so emotional. It's beautiful. It really
yes,
is.
Yes. I think the depth of that song probably is a mismatch for the depth of Hiding Out.
Yeah.
Arguably.
But it did maybe elevate it, perhaps.
Oh, no doubt. Katie Lang was, a lot of people actually forget about Katie Lang nowadays, you know, just she was had an epic career. Still kind of does, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, I love endurance as I am an example of that in any industry.
Just
doubt. Remaining, just endurance, right? Mm-hmm. Forget relevance or whatever, but just endurance is kind of an underrated success, mark of success, right? But Katie Lang, to your point, I just saw her at she gave a performance at the Hammer Gala in Los Angeles a couple years ago when nice. We could go to things.
Yeah.
And she sang Hallelujah, you know, the Leonard Cohen.
Oh,
it
man.
It was just, and you know, she sings barefoot. She's just, I don't know, I think she's one of those artists, musicians, soulstress singers who will always pull. She can't help but get emotional when you listen to her.
I used to sing barefoot. That's only because I would see Henry Rollins. Yeah, I was in a band for a number of years and would sing barefoot on stage because I saw Henry Rollins do it at a Lollapalooza.
Very punk rock of you. That's rad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not even my genre of music that I prefer to sing, but you know.
I'm sorry. I wish you had been barefoot, Zach, because you had seen Katie Lang do it.
Yeah.
And that was your motivation.
I'm barefoot now. I'm always, if I had an option, I would be barefoot. I if I could act barefoot, I definitely, when I do my voiceover work, I need to be barefoot. I need to touch the ground.
Grounding. I love it.
But a concert would be challenging, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially on stage. But, well, you're from New Mexico originally, right?
Yes, I was born in Albuquerque. And then, but sort of simultaneously grew up in Iowa as well. Oh. So I have kind of grew up in those two places.
Because so I was going to say, I spent a lot of time in Taos, New Mexico for a number of years.
Oh,
and I worked
wow.
on the Pueblo and
the Earth
taught at the day school.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I was barefoot a lot there on the ground.
That's, you touched sacred ground. That's beautiful.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're going very X-Files into the mysticism and
yes,
aliens.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah.
That is true. So, so Zach and I were able to rewatch Shag the other evening with my wife, and it is one of her favorite movies of all time. It was delightful for me for two reasons, and it's been about probably 30 years since I had seen Shag. I don't, Zach, for you
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, about the same for me as well.
About
yeah.
the same. But it was delightful because I got to see like my wife delight in it, which somehow I haven't, you know, we've been married like a million years and I have no idea that she loved this movie so much and quoted every line. But also, like, your performance in that movie is so, it's so grounded and so real.
Yeah.
Where you are everything that your character Pudge is going through. We're like, yep, relate to that. I relate to that. I relate to that. I relate to that. I relate to that. And so certainly, you know, and you're my wife's favorite character and always have been as well. And not to just, you know, give you compliment after compliment, but it was, I mean, we were like blown away. Like this is the best performance I've ever seen in a movie as far as just so grounded in your character.
Thank you. Which is interesting because I wasn't, you know, I'm not Southern, nor am I a dancer or, you know, didn't grow up sort of rich in the South. But, you know, I did the character Pudge for me. It's amazing how much A, that movie, but B, the character, who it resonates with and for and how long it kind of has remained so. It's an honor because I do come across many women of my genre who really, I think, you know, she's the heart piece of that movie.
Yeah, she really is.
And going through the agony of first love and you know, I kind of feel that way still. I'm just always a little bit like, a little bit of a misfit. I don't fit in. I'm not quite with the popular girls. I'm not as cool. I'm kind of a dork. I'd rather sit under a table with one person at a party than be in the midst of many, you know.
Agreed.
You wouldn't want to be, you know, shacking up with Robert Russell's character
on the
yacht?
Buzz.
Or be with
Buzz.
You know, or
He's a sweet potato.
He's a sweet potato.
Yeah.
You don't want to win the contest, you know.
It's funny too because on sometimes people want me to either on Cameo or whatever, or when I meet people, they want me to say the line about the boner, right? The southern the boner. It's not a muscle, it's a bone. But it's such an awkward. I just did it for you guys.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, we didn't have to join Cameo, so thank you.
Right.
It is a trip though. That your character really stands out. We were talking about this when we were watching it. You have so many moments that, like Dustin said, are relatable in the sense that it just feels a lot more real. You are the heartbeat of the movie. You have the biggest kind of arc throughout the whole film, and it's really refreshing. Like you said, you stand out, you're a misfit. I can relate to that. Dustin can relate to that. I probably, you know, wear that as a badge of honor nowadays. When I was a teenager or in my early 20s, I was so awkward and uncomfortable and didn't know who I was or knew who I was, but wanted to fit in, you know, and nowadays I tell my son, I'm like, it's better to stand out than fit in, you know?
Yeah.
And you as a parent can relate to that too with your kids, right?
Oh God, absolutely. I have such tenderness for that time in, you know, anyone's adolescence and just emotional growth. It's such a painful time, right?
It is.
And still is today, although in very different ways because of social media and connection. And
yes,
you know, there's something so sweet about that movie, and you know, but to give credit to the casting, you know, the group of those of us together, Paige Hannah, Phoebe Cates, Bridget Fonda, and myself, and Scott Coffey, you know, Robert Ressler. It was just such a really special, you know how when that magic happens, it was a blast of a movie to film in Myrtle Beach, but it was hot and sweaty, and the dance sequence that Kenny Ortega, you know, the famed choreographer, who I worked with again, you know, it was just, we had to learn to do the shag, and we weren't quite as good as the locals, you know? So it was very stressful. I remember there was a lot of work for that.
Well, dare I say, some of the best dance sequences next to Saturday Night Fever, no doubt. Sincerely, like, you know, because they're not cutting away or having these shots of your, you know, from the shoulders up, like, look at my dance move, and then they're cutting to the feet, you know.
Yeah, Kenny was very, thank God, I'm and we worked our asses off, you know. And so Stagger Lee, that's my, like, if we want to talk about music, Stagger Lee is the song I associate with shag.
Nice.
I was standing on the corner when I heard my
It was the song to which Scott and I did the final dance competition.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's just forever embedded into my memory and my mind, everything. Just even I can still do the dance steps, the routine.
You can?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yep. Yep, for sure.
That's awesome. I love it. I'm such a terrible dancer. I'm more like John Cryer was in Hiding Out. And as a roller skater too, my wife is just like, you just stand there and look pretty, and I'll roller skate around you, you know.
I feel like roller skating is very deceiving because you put them on and you're like, okay, I'll just move my knee and I'll move, and then you don't move, and then you know, at least I've
need
never
that
moved.
Cart.
Yeah,
that thing.
You can't.
I'll be out there for hours and never
you can't
move,
shoot the
right.
duck. Dustin, you can't.
I can't shoot the duck. I can't walk the dog or hammer
Moonlight,
the rooster.
Or, yeah, the crossover step. Yeah.
No.
You said, Dustin, you said hammering your rooster? Is that what you call
it? Oh, I don't know. I was just animal metaphors that might be applicable to roller skating in the off chance. You just told me what that move is for the first time. I don't even know what these are. But but yeah, maybe one day back on the rink.
Right.
When we all get vaccinated and we're
indeed.
All
indeed. Yeah.
My God. I do feel like roller skating is one of those things where, you know, like when you're not good at it and then enough years go by and you're like, I guess I just don't need to try that hard. But that's such a weird approach to it. You know, it really should be the opposite. Like if I cared enough to be a great roller skater, then I would become one maybe.
Yeah.
I hope.
Well, you know, I think a few years ago, roller skating birthday parties were kind of back in for my kids.
Oh, yeah.
But I found in returning to that, I'm a little bit like, maybe it's just age or brittle bones or fear or whatever. It's like, I could fall. I could really hurt myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And have your kids seen Hiding Out?
No. You know, my husband and I were talking about this because over the quarantine, it's been like a history of cinema with our family because we've had so much time.
Love that.
And yet, I don't know if it's because I'm so reticent, but like they haven't seen any of my films.
And how dare they?
Well, I it could be because of me. Not that anything's, you know, certainly in the 80s movies that are risque. I mean, I definitely don't want my sons to watch my Sons of Anarchy scenes. But but those movies are so pure and beautiful. But I'm just very shy about, I hate watching myself. I don't like to rewatch anything. I see it once and then I'm done. And B, you know, it's just strange with your children. You want them to know, you know, I suppose as I'm getting older, they'll watch it when they're ready.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I just think in terms of you're going to roller skating parties. And
yes.
You might want to see what mom has done.
That's right.
Guys, just this clip. I'm going to show you this clip and then that's it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think about that roller skating scene in Hiding Out and I cringe every time because I feel personally like, oh, I've been there, done that, flopped on my face. But your character in that movie, we talked about this, Dustin and I. We did an episode, top five Keiths in our prep for Keith Coogan. We talked about our favorite Keith actors.
Who I love, by the way. I just recently reconnected with Keith and he still as charming and joyful and just he and his wife I met and just was so happy to see them again.
And speaking of cinema history, I mean,
yes, totally.
He's all over that.
Yes. Sorry, Zach, go back. You were
I was just saying that that we said in our top five Keiths episode when Dustin was saying Hiding Out is one of his favorite Keith movies, right? And so I was saying how you have such a genuine warmth on screen every time. Especially in those early films, and your career has really—it's so vast and so versatile. And you were talking about endurance in the beginning of this episode. It's so true that you've worn so many different hats throughout your career, but always coming back to that idea. Even if you're playing, like, you know, on the bridge, your character on the bridge was kind of devious and cunning, and which I love, by the way. I thought you were wonderful in that. That especially the first season is just like fantastic. But still this warmth of like uniqueness, I guess. And when you were speaking about how you felt like a misfit or, you know, somewhat of an outsider, I think that's what the appeal is of seeing you on screen. Cause you're like, yeah, no, she's not everybody else. You know, it's like, he's not that typical action star. He's this guy, you know, you have this presence on screen, which is so inviting. And it just, you know, to piggyback on Dustin's compliments, I have to say the same thing. It's just, it's really fantastic to see the performances you've had and the growth you've had and how different all of these roles are.
Thank you, Zach. I appreciate that. You know, I think maybe that's why I haven't really watched the movies with the boys, because I feel so vulnerable. You know, those early, I was literally plucked from the cornfields of Iowa for my very first film at 13, Desert Bloom.
Yeah.
And then I went on this kind of amazing role, like, of just these great 80s movies, you know, like Mystic Pizza. I think I did Shag first, then I did Hiding Out, and then I did Mystic Pizza. And it was all while I was in high school in Iowa.
That's crazy.
And, that's amazing.
And it was, you know, it was really kind of hard to go back and forth between, and I had never really been to Hollywood. I was just on these movie sets. I was clearly willing. I loved acting. I loved being that sort of open vessel or, you know, force. But now I see it, and I it's like, fuck, man, I was vulnerable. I've really,
you know,
it's hard to grow up on screen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And then also, like I said, like I mean, it's most of those movies that I was in, every other actor kind of catapulted into massive stardom, you know?
Yeah.
So just like I said, I've never been this cookie cutter movie star actor. I'm a bit more, you know, I don't know what I am, but
well, you said you did Desert Bloom at 13.
Yeah.
And that must've been a trip. So like, how did that come about?
It was, you know, I had started acting locally in Cedar Falls, Iowa, the Mecca of the industry.
Of course. Fun fact about Iowa, I think it was one of the first schools in the country to have to make their focus mindfulness. And I forget specifically, Oprah did a whole episode on it.
There's a Maharishi, there's some sort of temple in Iowa, I think, that was very early on prescient about all the mindfulness.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But so Desert Bloom was just a fluke. My parents were professors. I knew I liked acting. My dad was at a conference in Minneapolis for Western literature or something. And there just happened to be an open casting call for this film called Desert Bloom. And I auditioned for it. And I was one of 800 girls. And then I was one of 20. And then I was one of two. And it was, at the time, between Winona Horowitz and I, Winona Ryder.
Winona Horowitz, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So wild, right? Like, that was my beginning, and I had zero clue about the industry, but just fell into working with John Voight and Ellen Barkin and Jo Beth Williams, you know, in this incredible little indie film that was very powerful.
Indie, but when a time when indie wasn't cool.
Yeah. It was Sundance. Right. It was literally Sundance when Sundance started with Waldo Salt. Like, yep. The beginning.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a trip.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Good. That gives me chills just thinking about how you said 800, then down to 20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dustin and I are both actors, and I was a kindergarten teacher for 15 years and then got into acting, voice acting specifically. And so I always equated it to being in a long-term relationship that was stable and then suddenly dating again, you know, where you go out on that first date and you're like, oh, this is going to be great. And then you never hear from the person again. You're like, well, I thought we had a thing, you know, we had this connection.
That's a very good analogy, except I would argue that it's never a stable relationship.
No, it's not.
Never.
And you're in debt because you spend all this money on you pay for the date, you know. Well,
yeah.
We'll go to the fancy restaurant.
That's right.
And then you're in debt. And then...
That's right. So true.
But when you have that level of success at 13, did that give you a stronger sense of self and confidence, or was it the opposite?
You know, I think it's one of the reasons that I did take time right when Mystic Pizza came out, much to the chagrin of my agent at the time. I did go to college because I would not have sustained any sort of emotional well-being had I come straight from high school in Iowa, even though I'd had this success, to LA. I just didn't have that.
Amazing.
No, I didn't have the scaffolding of that. So going to college really gave me that. So to answer your question, no, I mean, I was always a insecure, awkward, growing up adolescent who was fumbling my way through, you know, and it was, I remember I went to the homecoming dance in Cedar Falls, Iowa with my boyfriend at the time, and then had to go from there to the Waterloo Airport to get into a private jet to fly to New York for the Today Show to be on with Julia and Lily. It was such a, you know, so you can see how that's
so surreal.
A little fucking confusing.
A little bit.
It's like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's really odd. That's really...
Yeah, but my parents, to their credit again, like gave me, kept me very grounded, and certainly my, because I stayed in high school in Iowa and didn't get my GED, and because I then went to college, which was kind of expected as both of my parents are professors, you know, like I do think that that's why I have such a normal life now. I work a lot, which I'm, you know, grateful for. But I really have a lot of balance in my life too. My life is very, you know, carpool, mundane, all that shit.
Excellent.
Packed lunches.
Sleepovers.
Yep.
Well, that's a job in itself too, though. You know?
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Are you guys in LA?
We are.
I'm in Santa Monica.
Okay. Oh, great. Okay.
And I'm in Altadena.
Altadena.
So when you mentioned roller rinks, I thought of that, the one in, what is it, North, like Northridge?
I think. Yes, that's the one where we have gone for these birthday parties, yeah.
Yeah, I used to teach at a school called Buckley in the Valley.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And so the kids would always be like, Mr. Schaefer, will you come to my birthday party at the Northridge,
awesome.
Whatever? And then it would always come back to, I use the excuse, well, as a teacher, I can't go to your birthday party because if I do, I have to go to everybody's birthday party.
Right.
But the reality was, because I can't skate, I was just going to show up and I didn't want to look like an ass.
Right.
So I would have never respected you again.
Yeah. Mr. Schaefer can't skate.
So there's
this idea of Mr. Schaefer can do anything. And then suddenly, then they see.
The reality.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, so here you are at the Today Show promoting Mystic Pizza.
Yeah.
I want to personally go back a little bit to hiding out when you got cast for that.
Mm.
I'm assuming there was not another 800.
No. I mean, I remember, I think I auditioned for it, and what a blast that movie was. We shot in Wilmington, North Carolina, and we all lived in condos on the beach in Wrightsville Beach. Again, like before that became like Dawson's Creek and, you know, the mecca of North Carolinian cinema.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it was, I just remember it being kind of I was super happy to get that. I'd obviously known John because of Pretty in Pink. He'd done Pretty in Pink before.
Yep.
And so I was
coming home.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I love that movie.
So it was awesome. And then he is truly one of the nicest, funniest, most generous guys. I loved every minute of working with him. Funny.
Yeah. And just like, it seems like so much fun being on set with, you know, a unique story, you know, not your typical high school story.
No. But that was a movie that was, you know, while Shag was very complicated and hot and in depth, Hiding Out was just a fun job all the way around. Every element was just
That's
fun.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. One thing I did want to mention about Shag is that's so unique about it is that it is one of the few coming of age stories in the 80s for women. Which you really, you know, there's hundreds for dudes and so it's, I feel like it's extra powerful as a film.
Yeah, you know, I kind of cringe at the term chick flick, obviously, but
glad I did not say that then.
Yeah, no. I it's also a cute term. It's very cute. But I, you know, between Shag and Mystic Pizza, and both were really, really popular for women, you know? And again, I think because both of them, they spotlighted the emotional angst of what adolescence into maturity is for young women in realistic mm-hmm. terms, not, you know, fancy, just really kind of authentically, you know?
It felt like it had a, like an autobiographical vibe throughout. It didn't feel like this.
Which one, Shag?
Shag did, yeah.
Yeah.
It did not feel cliche. It really didn't. I mean, I know it's a period piece, but, and obviously the 50s and 60s were so popular in the 80s because of people, you know, from that generation making movies and like, oh yeah, everyone's going to love this. But
it was an interesting collaboration too, because, you know, the screenwriter was Robin Swycord, who is still so prolific, and her daughter is Zoe Kazan, and she's married to Nick Kazan. A lot of talent in that family, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
But so Robin wrote the screenplay, but it was directed by Zelda Baron and produced by Stephen Woolley, who were both British. So it had this very interesting, I don't know, multinational, you know, it was just kind of a very interesting collaboration between Brits and Americans, and somehow maybe that helped. But I don't know if it's an autobiography as a story. I don't know the origins of it, actually. I can't remember.
Well, yeah, I you know, assuming that it's not, but just in that sense that it feels so genuine and real.
Yeah.
And what an interesting time for like Phoebe Cates, who kind of, you know, we're going into a different stage of her career.
Yes.
And then Bridget Fonda kind of on the beginning of her career.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously Paige Hannah. I look at Paige Hannah, I'm like, oh, you're from Creepshow too. Yeah. Great. Yeah. You know, but different stages, everybody's at in their career. And again, going back to your character, where I'm like, yeah, but I like Pudge the most, because Pudge is like the one that's no offense, but that's the buddy you want to hang out with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
For sure. But the buddy's the one you end up like having the deepest connection with.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I think that was definitely there on the page. It's interesting. We had a reunion at the Screen Actors Guild a couple years ago, I think. And only one, Paige was there. But, you know, Phoebe doesn't act anymore.
No.
Bridget doesn't act anymore. Scott Coffey's a filmmaker. And, you know, it's interesting. Again, like back to that word of endurance. I don't know if it's, maybe it's, maybe everyone else decided not to be a glutton for punishment like I am still.
I know, but you clearly love
great.
What you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you clearly
love it. I love it. And I also, you know, I am one of those people who I very much love to work. I'm a better human when I have a focus and a job and a schedule. So I'm not selective in the sense of like, I'm crafting my career based on only these projects. Like, I love working and I love people. So I'm proud of the fact that I'm, you know, I am working, and there's still work for me to do. Clearly I do feel more confident now. Just because it's, you know, as you age, you're just like, oh, fuck it. I accept myself.
That's the key right there,
yeah,
I think.
Right.
I wake up every morning trying to do that. Look
I
in the
know,
mirror.
I know.
I'm smart enough. Good enough. Gosh
the
darn it. People like me.
Affirmations.
Yeah.
Affirmations are the key.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that Stuart Smalley would be the...
he was the harbinger of days to come.
But you're saying that you shot... So you didn't shoot these films, like, obviously in sequence. You know, you said you might be maybe made Shag first and then Hiding Out and then Mystic Pizza, perhaps?
Yes, I made Shag first. I was 16 because I remember... Oh, no. I turned 16 when I was making Hiding Out, because there's a funny story with my friend Kirsten, who was helping me learn to drive, and we went out for the first time in a car, and I left the car running or something like that, something silly, on Wrightsville Beach. I was, maybe I was, I feel like, God, maybe I did hiding out first. I have to figure it out. But I know Shag and hiding out, they were all pretty close together within a 3-year period or 2-year period, because I was 16 and 17. I was sick and a little, and because I was going back and forth between high school and crazy.
So that age difference between you and John Cryer was kind of legit.
It was. It was legit. Yeah.
Scandalous.
Well, and on Mystic Pizza, I remember, you know, I had to make out with Billy Moses. And,
yep.
You know, it's like my mom was there at the time as my guardian. And she's like, I'm just going to stay at the hotel. You know?
Right. Good idea, Mom.
I'm not going to be on set for that one, even though it's probably illegal.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny because I would go to movies with my mom and I'd see a love scene in a movie, like Romancing the Stone. And I was uncomfortable because I'm sitting next to my mom and I'm just like, oh, this is really awkward, you know?
Yeah.
And then the reverse, your mom's from like, oh, this is really awkward.
So awkward. Totally. That's pretty cool, though, that they allowed me to do it. You know, they knew that I had the emotion. And it was safe. It was always very safe and respectful. And because these stories were so heart-based and authentic, you know, they knew there was a value to that artistically, you know?
Well, Mystic Pizza has this, I would say, that seems to be like, you know, a quintessential 80s movie.
The right? Chick flick. It is.
Chick flick.
It is, unquote. Yeah.
And
that launched Matt Damon's career, by the way.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The school ties and...
Yeah. Right. One of the things that I get a lot of comments on, especially from women, is that scene where I cry after I've found out that the babysitter that I'm screwing is married. And for me, this is a segue back to our music discussion.
Yeah, I was just about to ask.
Great. Mm-hmm. On repeat, I played the song Fragile by Sting.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's
so
a great song.
That's an association, a musical association for Mystic Pizza, as is, though, the Aretha Franklin song that we all sing in the car.
That.
Yeah.
I have a really random musical situation as well, where the When He's Not a Stranger opening credits song plays in my head nearly every week.
He's not joking.
I just revealed this to Zach last week.
The fact that you've seen When He's Not a Stranger is
it left a big impression on me, you know, because I was just like, I was like, ooh, college is scary.
Don't be a rapist.
I was like, okay, don't be a rapist, number
Seriously,
one.
Everyone.
It was like that movie and like Higher Learning, which had like Michael Rapaport as a Nazi. Like those two movies, like, oh yeah, colleges. But not that When He's Not a Stranger is scary, exactly, but it was memorable.
What's the song?
The song goes like, it's a made-for-TV movie, right? The credits but the song is like, dun, 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 dun. It's just piano. And then it layers music.
Wow.
But my entire life since I've seen that song, it will just get in there. And then sometimes I'll forget. I'm like, what am I singing? Oh, yeah, Witty's Not a Stranger. That makes
I so, love it.
Yeah, it's very random. And
But isn't that fascinating? I do think that. You know, who's the famous doctor who wrote about it? How music, it wasn't Oliver Sacks, but it was someone else who was just how music helps encode things and neural pathways and everything. But I think that's really interesting how music can just like
It's crazy. And it's also like the credits are coming up, but it's you and your friend in various still shots of innocence.
Uh-huh.
You know, so.
Oh, God.
So it's like before that dark turn.
Oh,
you know,
Jesus.
It's just, yeah.
What? Painful. Painful.
Welcome to painful $2 late fees.
This
is like walk down memory lane, pain and anguish.
You're stepping on glass like that guy in Venice. So.
Yeah. Well, at any point, yeah, if you want to back out, we certainly can.
I'm good.
About any number of things. But no, I appreciate, appreciate that.
I need to go back and, find that and listen to it.
It's on YouTube.
Okay, great.
It's very accessible.
Actually, like, I remember that was the last project I did before. In fact, I was late to my freshman year of college.
Of course you were, because you were terrified. You're like, I don't want to go to college.
After that.
Exactly.
It's like Jaws for you.
Totally. I've removed it from my brain, though.
Don't go to college.
Right.
But I remember that was a deep performance. It was pretty guttural, like, right? Like, I'll never forget this, like, very long monologue I had about reenacting reliving the date rape experience. And with Kevin Dillon, right? Remember Kevin was in that movie?
Yep.
But I think, Dustin, you are maybe one of 10 people who have seen it and are haunted by the music.
Badge of honor. Badge of honor, honestly.
Dustin and I did an episode. Our top five most traumatic movies.
That traumatic one
traumatic with a T.
Okay.
And like things that scarred us from our youth,
uh-huh.
You know, and why it stays with you to this day.
Ugh.
But there's something about that. It was obviously an intense performance, and you know, something like a scene from Salem's Lot where there's a vampire at the window and scratching, let me in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but that one didn't factor into our top five, but.
Right. How about obscure, random, never seen movies of the week, MOWs?
I mean, most of our top five lists are that anyway.
Okay. They are. Well, that's good. It's good to be random and obscure.
We go down a deep path. I was gonna bring up the fact that we had Ari Gross on our show.
Oh, yeah. Coupe de Vil.
And we talked about Coupe de Vil. I'm a huge Mike Binder fan. I'm from Michigan originally, so I really related and connected to his films early on, Coupe de Vil and Crossing the Bridge and Indian Summer. Right?
Yeah, Indian Summer. Yeah.
Really, like, kind of underrated, in my opinion. Coupe de Vil, I think, is a very underrated film, underappreciated. And Ari kind of walked us through why that movie didn't become as successful as maybe it should have been.
Oh, I would be curious to know. I don't know.
I got to listen to that episode. No.
Okay, I will. I've got to go back. Traumatic episodes, Ari Gross. I listened to the one with Keith.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Keith is, you know, so great coming on our show. And when the pandemic first hit for us, because we would have in-studio guests.
Oh,
and it was so nice having people sit down with us and, you know, kind of walking through everything. Matt Adler was, I think, our last one we did in studio. Or maybe it was Eric Roberts. I forget. Anyways.
Tough to know.
Ari,
like 9 years ago.
Blur's day. Right. Yeah.
It's all blur now. But Ari was talking about how, you know, the producer of that film went on to go to another studio. And so Universal.
The director of the film became like the biggest producer. Yes,
that's what it was.
Not producer, sorry. He was a director who became one of the biggest studio heads.
Yes.
Like massive. Mm. So, yeah, it was probably fraught with all kinds of politics.
Which is such a shame because, you know, that film, I think, like, can you talk about some of your experiences on that one? Did you enjoy making that one?
Yeah, you know, I was very brief. I think they were, because I only flew down to Florida and spent a couple weeks.
Spent a lot of time in the South.
Yeah, I have, you know, and I loved it, obviously. So, because I went to Duke, I stayed in North Carolina
there
for a
go.
While. I love it. But yeah, most of my stuff was with Ari, but it was an interesting time because it was Patrick Dempsey,
Yep. Daniel Stern.
Yep, Daniel Stern. And it was, you know, that weird 50s time. I remember, you know, my hair and makeup was all 50s. But it was good. I don't remember anything distinctly, you know, strange
awful.
Or interesting or, yeah. about it.
Well, you bring up your hair, and I know when we were watching Shag the other night, Dustin's wife Erin said, I wanna put some product in her hair so bad in the opening.
Totally.
Hair was wonderful.
Yeah. And I can relate to that too. I used to have really longer hair and frizzy, and it was just, I still put a lot of product in my hair.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was, in fact, that I'll never forget. That was an issue because I had like fluffy, weird hair that didn't do well with the humidity in Myrtle Beach.
Yep.
And so hairspray didn't even work and it never matched. And like, it was always a thing. And then you end up thinking like, oh shit, it's my fault. This scene sucks because my hair is fluffy.
No, the only hair I ever saw like that was a principal of mine at a former school I used to teach at. And the shadow she cast looked like Darth Vader.
Yeah.
The helmet.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yep.
You knew she was coming.
See yeah.
her down the hall.
Was not as sweet as Pudge. So.
No.
Right.
You know what we're watching as a family now is Freaks and Geeks. Have you guys ever?
Oh, it's the best.
So great.
It's the best.
It is brilliant, sheer brilliance. And I'm glad we hadn't watched it until now because we're watching it with my teenage kids.
Yeah, very relatable.
And but the music, oh my. That's what fascinates me too, is like, how can you not hear a song for decades and yet you hear it or watch it and then it's, you know all the words. It's still
yep.
locked in your brain. That's fascinating
yep.
to me.
I think this documentary was, I don't know how much truth was in this documentary and how much was kind of cooked up, but there's a documentary about water and music and the power that music has on water and how it shapes
wow.
the molecules. And they did this test where they put water next to classical music and then they put water next to heavy metal, hard, like death metal.
Oh, cool.
And they showed the molecules changing. There's been people that are speculated that it's made up or whatever.
I don't know.
I feel like I've seen
something about that. Yeah.
The power of music with water. But you were saying, you know, what these songs resonate with you.
Yeah.
Obviously, the songs for the three standout 80s movies that we talked about connected with certain songs and have stayed with you. If you heard that song again on the radio, you'd probably start singing along to it like it was yesterday.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I love that. I the power of, we often talk about how a song can change a movie, you know, it can make or break it.
Oh yeah.
If the soundtrack's not good, then
totally agree.
It
yeah.
really can hurt the tone, you know?
Yeah. And we're also savvy now. We you can tell when they clearly didn't have a good music budget, you know, or something.
That's
they
right.
couldn't get the rights to that song, so they kind of got us secondhand, you know.
Yeah, there was a movie, there was an animated movie that came out a couple years ago that I thought was brilliant in its concept, but the score was not very good. It was just very generic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you got to have these certain artists in the movie to make it punch. But they didn't focus that on the movie.
What movie was that for our context?
Onward.
Oh, okay. Onward. Got it.
Which it was these kids go on a quest to save their father who's died and they can bring him back for one day. It's a Pixar movie. It's a sweet story, Disney movie. But the music was all, you know, very forgettable score in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, these kids are playing Dungeons and Dragons and wearing like death metal jackets. Where's the Iron Maiden? Where's the Motorhead? Where's AC/DC Thunderstruck as they're going to rescue their father, you know?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. These film scores, it can make or break a film.
Where's the 80s music in Wonder Woman 84?
Exactly.
I'm still looking for it. I haven't found it.
I don't know. And again, like, look, I'm always aware of, you know, constantly being a critic, right? Critic, criticize, whatever. Gal Gadot is a major, amazing human female.
Yes.
Totally.
And
no
so
doubt.
Is Jenkins, but weird.
I just have to say one more shout out about The Bridge, you know, because I often feel like people forget that show.
Mm,
you know?
Yeah.
It came out at an interesting time when... The Killing, I think, was really popular at that time.
Yeah, it was weird.
So
the Bridge had a lot of internal politics that were not that did not foster long-term success. And then I feel like both The Bridge and Brotherhood, two of my favorite cable shows that I was on, just got like cut too soon.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you've had these opportunities to play, so like we've said in the beginning of the show, so many different characters.
Now
so many shows.
In my 40s it was all about cocaine and sex and guns, and now what's going to happen in my 50s? Who knows?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, in your 50s, it becomes a whole new thing.
I know.
Right? We're nearing the end of our time. We did want to give you the opportunity to promote whatever you'd like to talk about. Summer of Secrets, maybe, whatever.
Yeah, I June 5th, I have a special movie airing on Lifetime. It's the story of Jennifer Farber Dulos, a woman who was killed by her husband. And they still haven't found her body, so it's a really really tragic but still ongoing investigation. So that that I can't wait for Dustin you to hear. Tell me if you like the soundtrack to that. June 5th that is, and then on Lifetime, and then on Netflix in October, I'm very excited about Midnight Mass, the newest Mike Flanagan story, which I was in his Haunting of Hill House, and was great. This Midnight Mass is going to rock people's world. It is.
Oh, excited.
Going to be rad. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I love the process of making films and television shows, whatever it is. I just fucking love it. And as I'm sure you both do too. Like, otherwise we wouldn't sustain it. We'd go do something more stable and...
Yeah, we wouldn't be having this conversation, for sure.
Certainly.
Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to meet you both. This has been a lovely... This has been a genuinely... Some of these are painful AF, but this was truly, I guess, you know, because we're speaking as peers and fellow thespians, and so...
Well, I can tell you... Right. I can tell you that we have heard that before, where people have said, thank you so much for, like, not...
Fun. Yeah.
You know...
Being so. Dorks and jackasses?
Yeah.
Dorks and jackasses.
Well, I like dorks, so let's...
But that's the perfect testimonial, really, for us.
Okay.
Most of these are painful as fuck, but $2 late fee was okay.
But $2 late fee didn't suck.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Okay.
It's really an honor. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and, you too, guys.
Thank you.
I hope to meet you in person one day.
Yeah, that's our goal.
Same here.
Okay.
Da-na-na-na.
Yeah. I gotta go find that song. Okay, bye.
Yes, bye.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.
I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a
Is it 5-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.